Memorial Day weekend is over, which means we are back at it again here on the Chicago Bears podcast. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin, breaking down the latest around, of course, this team, but also around the NFL. There may be a new offseason setup here with this NFLPA possible offseason proposal that they're trying to push through. Could this make things a little bit difficult for offseason content in the future? I think so, because there's going to be a lot of time in between if this goes through. And PFF has the Chicago Bears as having two top 32 tackles in the NFL. This conversation is going to get interesting as we break that down. And of course, just news around the world that many baseball fans are celebrating is Andrew Hernandez has finally retired. Who's the one person that if they retired from football, you'd be happy for? Comment that in the comments below. Who would you be excited about? Let us know. All that and more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears Podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Courtney, how are you? Did you get a Memorial Day weekend in, or were you on the run?
No, we're grinding. It's that time of year. So I think I did two shows yesterday. I was on air from 5 to 9 a.m. and then around the horn, and I just got back from that. So race to the finish line, to our much-needed mid-June break, which may or may not go away if the NFLPA proposal goes through. It's going to be really interesting, but the report that came out today from NFL Network, this is like greasing the wheels for an 18 game calendar, like an 18 game schedule for the NFL. And I have a lot of issues if they're only going to ask for what effectively is kind of a minor schedule change in like reworking the offseason. There are far bigger things that they need to bring to the table to represent the players and feel like they got a good end of the deal here than just like switching around when OTAs would happen in the future.
Yeah. Everything always gets tied in with player safety. And this to me was the one where I was like, really? So like put all of the playing and working and all of that together and then just give them a full off season. Is that the best thing for safety? I guess maybe you're getting more of a rest time, but how much football are you playing? Let's jump into that topic though. I mean, listen, we're talking about it already. NFL Player Association is working to finalize a proposal to overhaul the offseason. Saw this first from Tom Pelissero. Starting as soon as 2025, this would eliminate voluntary on-field work in the spring in favor of a longer training camp ramp up with players reporting in mid-June to early July. The NFLPA has consulted medical and performance experts to create a solution for reducing injuries and maximizing player recovery time. Under the potential proposal, virtual classroom work would still be permitted in the spring, but no practices until camp. Courtney, when you hear this, where does your mind go? Do you feel like this is something that is going to be beneficial to football? Do you feel like this kind of changes the game too much? Where do you see just starting off?
The first thing, like, why is this coming up? Well, you know, the new CBA will not be ratified they can't get into negotiations for, I think it's 2031 is when they can do it. Like they ratified the last one during COVID. They forced that thing through right before COVID like really took off in March of 2020. That's when the 17 game schedule, like the extending the schedule from 16 games to 17 games, that's when that went through. So to me, like the reason that they're doing this and the reason that there is this reported proposal from the NFLPA is because like they're greasing the wheels here for an 18 game season. And after getting like the why are they doing this part out of the way, my brain goes immediately back to that COVID season because that's the only time we've seen something similar to what is being proposed. They're not doing away with OTAs, they're just moving it to players reporting early or like mid-June, mid to late June or like early July, and then having a ramp up period, which is what OTAs are right now. Like they're not in pads. There's different phases of it with like different amounts of work that you can do, whether it's, you know, weight room work to on field, like workouts to, you know, a full team mini camp, which for the Bears takes place next week. It goes from that into training camp without the month long break that they get June, like whatever day the last OTA is for them. I believe it's like June 14th through right. the time that they report for training camp. It's different than what we're used to, but I remember that COVID season talking with players when I covered the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, it was all weird for all of us. We had no idea how any of this was going to pan out. We couldn't see them face to face. We were still allowed out at practices, but it was new territory from like how you were covering the team, but also to how players were getting ready for the season, because the season ended up getting moved back. I believe it was like a week or two till the start date came in, and it was late July, early August, no preseason games, which I would wonder if those would end up going, like if there would be something on the table there with the preseason games, that they would just go away, or if it would be, you know, modified somehow. But like, can, you know, when I think back to that season and how players felt like their bodies might have been a little fresher in terms of like, what are you trying to prevent here? It's all of the soft tissue injuries that pop up when guys are there for 6 weeks, have about a month off, come back for training camp. And then sometimes we see this rash of injuries right away where like these soft tissue injuries end up keeping guys out of like, you know, preventing them from getting ready for the season. So
right.
if there's a way that the league is able to take any of that data that they have on these injuries and point to the schedule that's being proposed being better for player injuries, meaning if this is how it's going to change, again, we don't know like the actual dates, but if it's that players are off from the time that your season ends, so whether it's January to the day after the Super Bowl through the off season. So that would mean like until the time that you would come there in June. So that's February, March, April, May, for like a better part of four and a half months. If that's better for players' bodies, then I think you'd have a hard time arguing against it if player safety truly is in the forefront here and why they're doing this. I just really hope for the sake of the players that the NFLPA isn't just stopping here when they're arguing for how, all right, like balancing like the what do the owners want, what do the players want in return. They need, if they're having an 18-game schedule, you 100% need a second bye. They did not get one with the 17-game schedule. I think that that was to the detriment of the NFL as a whole and the product. But if you walk away from these negotiations whenever they happen down the road without a second bye, that's going to be like the thing that we look back at here and say, well, you know, screw the schedule change. If you don't have that, then the players once again come up empty-handed and the owners win.
I think my biggest question now with what, and I do believe the 18th game is coming, but
that's greasing the wheels for this. Like that's all.
Yeah. I think that is a foregone conclusion. The NFL is trying to take over as much as they can. And that does that. Right. But now you talk about 18 weeks, you talk about 18 games. You're talking about 19 weeks. If you include a bye week, I know it'd be 20 weeks, right? If you include a bye week in there. Your Super Bowl is now happening later in the year because of that, or you're starting earlier in the year, one or the other. And I guess my biggest thing on the player safety of it is we're basically doing away with a real offseason. I mean, if you play in the Super Bowl, go take a nap real quick because you got to get right back going 2.5, maybe month and a half later, depending on how they schedule things out. Like, I think that would be really, really tough to convince the NFLPA on, as far as, okay, these guys need, this is a collision sport. You're going to see injuries ramp up if guys have less rest.
And what they're going to argue is that the rest that they would get, like the second your season ends, because even if your season ends in the Super Bowl, you still have most of February, you know, depending upon where that game would get pushed to, but you'd have most of February, all of March, April, May, and a considerable portion of June. And I would imagine with the ramp up period, they probably would still have some stipulations in there about those workouts being voluntary, maybe for the first phase. It's probably just moving what OTAs are to June and just saying, okay, well, this, instead of like doing it April through May to early June, letting guys go back to, you know, have the month off break, go home, wherever it is, and then coming back for training camp. I don't think time off is ever a bad thing in terms of letting your bodies rest. It's just that how, you know, it feels, if you have 6 weeks of ramp up period going into 5-6 weeks of training camp, there's no break. Like I think that there is a benefit too for guys having the ramp up period, which is not just the physical, it's the mental part of learning the game, especially for rookies who, you know, then use their summers as a crash course while they're training away from the facility to make sure that like they're up to speed about where they need to be coming into training camp. I would love to hear what the argument would be about no, like the best use of their time, the best use of their, you know, the best way for them to stay healthiest while training is from doing it, like basically having their off-season training now part of the calendar, which would, if you're looking at like, you know, like when we go to training camp, like as reporters, I kind of think of it as, you know, every, you enter into it for us, I think it's going to be like July 20th. And then whenever the season ends, that's, you know, August, September, October, November, December, January, that's 6.5, 7 months of straight nonstop work. For players, right, that's effectively going to be the same thing when they, you know, now it's seven months, more or less, if it starts in the middle of June. Without having that break, I just feel like they've really got to think long and hard about that, because that doesn't just affect the players. That affects front office personnel. That affects the coaching staff. These are hard jobs, regardless of what you're involved in the NFL. And I think that the fact that the league is able to shut down for about 5 weeks before training camp starts up on the current schedule, that's not just a matter of, oh, well, whatever, they'll get their time off, you know, 3.5 months versus 1 month, more or less, like it's a better pay, is a better, you know, payout for that. I just feel like they're, the way that the NFL set up right now, it already has a command on the entire year. This, you know, they've got to think long and hard about whether the benefit here outweighs, you know, the non-benefits of moving it just to move it.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think that this does something as far as how we see people repeat Super Bowls, how we see teams that are together. Maybe you see teams stay together a little bit more in the NFL, because I do think that there's going to be, I mean, there's just less time to get ready, right? You're not sitting there now actually going through the plays in the offseason in this scenario. Yeah, you get the 6 weeks, but it's kind of like, all right, you're here. We got to figure this out now. And maybe that gets, you know, OTAs a little bit less voluntary. It's voluntary, kind of, but you should be here so that you know these things. Like, I just think it changes. It would be a major change. It wouldn't be just like we're moving the date from one spot to another. I think that it would be a lot for rookies that are coming in. I think that it would be a lot for team construction, because teams are going to want to have guys that have, hey, you know this system like the back of your hand already. We're not teaching you anything new when you start the season.
Well, look at some of the teams that are kind of doing a hybrid of this right now. The Cincinnati Bengals, ever since Zach Taylor got there and they started winning, like ever since really it started like being a deep playoff team once Joe Burrow got there, like they don't really do the whole OTA schedule. Like they're doing their OTA starting today. I mean, there were a couple like workouts earlier in May when like it was completely voluntary. You didn't see Trey Hendrickson there. You didn't see Jamar Chase. You didn't see T. Higgins. I don't know if Chase was there, but like regardless, like they're a team. The Rams are a team that if you are an older veteran team, and if you've won a lot, like you don't really take advantage as much of like, you give guys like the benefit of the doubt. Okay, you played long into the season. We'll give you that extra month. We'll give you an extra couple of weeks before we have the mandatory mini camp sort of thing. And that's like, as long as they continue, if that's going to be part of it, as long as they continue to leave that up to like the team discretion, I think that's really important. But it's, you know, I like when you brought up the rookies, those are the first people I think of. Cause if you're a rookie training for the NFL, you go from the end of your college season immediately into training. And guys talk about this all the time, just how like tough that first year is. By the time your first season's over, your body has to like its first chance in about a year to reset. What are we doing here? Like, because if the college season ends, and are we pushing the draft back? Are we pushing free agency back? Like, how is this going to work with the college football schedule? Because you're going to be getting a lot of rookies in. And I can't imagine, like, if the schedule were to stay the same, like draft where it's at right now. So let's say like late April, I can't imagine them like moving the OTA period to June, like drafting players and then like, right, you know, saying, okay, we'll see you when like, you know, everybody else comes in. They'd have to find that ramp up period for rookies, like when they'd have rookie mini camp, because when these guys get drafted, they're basically here end of April until the time June comes around. Like they don't have the option to like not come if you're a rookie or showing up. But I just think they'd have to change around like the schedule and mind of the rookies to make sure that they're giving those guys ample time to get acclimated, knowing what they just put their bodies through in the training process for the combine and for the draft, more or less, because they're like very much at risk of getting injured in all of that. Like we, you know, I saw it last week when I was in Kansas City, Xavier Worthy wasn't practicing. I think Mahomes said it perfectly that it's like, yeah, like sometimes these guys are practicing, you know, they're training really hard for the combine. So you get out there, you push it too much, and then you set yourself back a little bit. Like that's something that's got to be factored in terms of player safety to make sure that those players have enough time to not only like get acclimated to the NFL, but to give their bodies the rest that it needs before going like straight into a whole nother season without a break in between.
How do you think this would be perceived in the locker room the week of the Chicago Bears? I think that this is something, you know, that would mean a lot as far as, I guess, really it comes down to the travel of it. A lot of these guys don't live here. They're not from Chicago. They're not, you know, in the city. And so I guess you get, right, like you talked about after college, you get to spend more time with your family, get to spend more time in the off season, different things like that. How do you think this would be perceived in the Chicago Bears locker room right now?
I think it just kind of like player specific, age specific, guys with families, with kids, like you think about it now, and this is not a small part of this. I know some people will probably just roll their eyes and be like, well, these guys are making millions. Like they get time off. What other job gives you this much time off? Yeah. Like that's the NFL. Like that's like, we're not comparing this to like, oh, teachers get 3 months off in the summertime, or like I work all year round. Like I don't get that. It doesn't matter. I don't want to hear people like continue to lob those things at like the NFL. It's a completely, it's a non sequitur.
Like they're the same.
Like they're not. And but you do have players who are younger, who don't have families, who, you know, when you think about where the schedule is right now from late mid-June to July, that's when a lot of people's kids are out of school. So it's, you know, you're asking, these people are gone during the year, but they live at the facility more or less. You're in the building for like 12, 14 hours a day. Yep. Like that's a big strain on people. Like it's not just a matter of like players and like recovery and things like that. There's a personal element in here that I don't think should be overshadowed for front office personnel, for coaches, for players too, that has to be considered here. Because, and I think you'd have guys that are split who like having the ramp up period when it is a little bit of a lull, like where they have a true 5-6 week break where like, don't talk to me. I'm training, I'm doing things on my own. I will come back to the facility and then I'll be ready to go for training camp. I think going from like taking OTAs to like smushing that into training camp, there would probably be some pushback on that from players, like regardless of age, but also like taking into the factors, those who have families and other things. Like, you know, a lot of people are doing a lot of the younger players, like a CJ Stroud and Micah Parsons, look at their world tour that they've been on, promoting the NFL, getting to do things outside of football. I think there's guys who would look at like some of the other obligations that they have in their off time and not want to have to change up like when they're doing those things. It's all relative. And at the end of the day, it's the PA lobbying for their clients, more or less, which are the players. You've got to do right by those, like whatever the majority vote is on that, like what players, and I hope they do like big surveys on this and to make sure that they're getting the voice of the players heard.
Right.
You know, I think that there's a lot of players who are going to look at this and be like, yeah, that schedule change is great, whatever. Can we get another buy-in here? Otherwise, I don't want this. And they wouldn't
I think that has to be mandatory when you start breaking some of this stuff down. You should have got, I'm surprised we didn't get it for 17. You absolutely should have gotten it for 17. I thought it was interesting. Adam Hogue of CSGO actually dropped a report on the players and how they may be in favor of it. But I thought it was very interesting. At the end of his report, he goes, my understanding is that Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus have already discussed this with some of the leaders on the team about this plan. When I hear that, that sounds to me like this may be a foregone conclusion in a lot of people's minds already.
I mean,
that this may be something that, listen, you can try and fight against it, but more than likely, the monster that the NFL has become is putting this.
Well, we know that an 18-game schedule is coming, just a matter of when. And of course, like that has to be collectively bargained. But because we know that, then you, like, from there, you can start peeling back the layers of, okay, what is it going to take for the players to agree to that? And a change in the offseason schedule certainly could be one of them. And using sports science and, you know, when injuries have become more prevalent, like getting guys off the grass is, or getting guys onto the grass off of, like, you know, outside of, like, the, you know, being on turf. Like, those are things that they've looked at over the years. It's why there's certain days that are mandated that you can't be inside, that you need to be out onto the field. And certain days when you're not on the field. Like, that's why they can't be hitting each other at this time of the year, because they know that injuries, that there's just, like, those are, like, very basic things, but those have all been, they've been proven and then been collectively bargained into the agreement between the league and the players. So I'm not surprised that some players reportedly, like, feel like this is the way that they want it to go. I would imagine around the league that you're going to have a split decision, that it's not going to be completely unanimous because of the way that things have been done. And you're going to get players who are later in their career believing one thing versus younger players who don't know what they don't know. And they're just, they really have no say, especially the rookies that are going to be just coming into the league in a couple of years when this thing probably goes through. But the way that it came out today, where it was reported from, you know, the media leg of the NFL itself, I think that that shows you this is not just an idea that's being thrown out, that it is something that's probably in the works and has been in the works.
It's going to make coming up with off-season content a lot more interesting. 3 months of nothing.
If we had 3 months of, like, and I mean, I would think they'd have to push free agency back, because if the season's going longer and then, you know, the draft, like what they do with that, like there's going to be some pretty considerable changes. They've got to get those ducks in a row to know, like, okay, if we move the schedule back, that's because free agency is going to the end of March or early April. Like, we haven't seen it like that in my time covering it. It's like in years. I don't know the last time that, like, I mean, I remember 1 year covering the draft and it was early May. I think it was like 2014, but it usually, free agency and the draft has stayed around the same time every year. And I remember even during COVID, when they were pushing the CBA through then, they were talking about when they might have to move some things around, and they never did. So they didn't get much last time. That's my biggest takeaway. When they got that 17 games, when the owners got their 17 games, the players really came up empty handed. And that was negotiated by DeMorris Smith, who's no longer stepped away from it. He's no longer in his post as the, you know, the head of the NFLPA and the voice of the players. I just hope this time around that they're able to come to something that, like, doesn't leave the players and everyone thinking the players got screwed out of a good deal or a more fair one.
Yeah. And I mean, especially you would have to think, if this goes, like we've talked about, we've kind of taken this to the full degree of the 18th game schedule. Your Super Bowl this year is February 9th. Mm-hmm. You would be talking about probably moving that out 2 more weeks.
Yeah, like past Valentine's Day. That's
February 23rd. That means you're in the last week of February playing the Super Bowl. That means you're talking about free agency basically having to start immediately the day after.
No, they would have to do it. They would have to push, I think, everything back a month, which it just doesn't seem realistic right now when you're thinking about it, but they'd have to find a way to, like, make sure that there is some break. I know that the NFL's goal of, like, world domination means that they, like, occupy every single day of the year. That's never going to happen. And right now, I think they have a happy medium between that. But if there is ultimately something sports science, player health-wise, that they can point to saying the ramp-up period right into training camp is better, that's going to be their strongest case to moving the schedule to a different time of the year.
We'll see what ends up happening with it. At a minimum, right now, it seems like there may be some movement on OTAs, which could make things a lot more interesting heading into next season. Let us know you guys' thoughts in the comments below. Do you like this move? How do you think it affects the players? How do you think it affects some of these organizations? Let's keep this thing moving along, though. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We do want to let you guys know that today's episode is brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana. Las Vegas-style gaming, just 30 minutes from Soldier Field. Exit 6 right off of I-80-94. According to PFF, Courtney, the Chicago Bears have two top 32 tackles. They're looking at Braxton Jones right now as the 31st best tackle in the NFL, and Darnell Wright as the 32nd best tackle in the NFL. I have some questions on 31. I'm going to be honest with you. I love Darnell Wright. I have some questions on Darnell Wright at 32, but I think that tells you how hard it is to find a tackle in the NFL and be consistent at that position. But looking at Darnell Wright, it's well documented. My thoughts on how he struggles with the bull rush, what we've seen, you know, he's over exceeded his fifth round selection, but has there been enough? PFF says a fifth round pick out of Southern Utah in 2022. Jones proved in 2023 that his impressive rookie season was not a fluke. Although he was slowed down by an injury, had a bit of decline from his 2022 season, he's still one of 24 offensive tackles to have earned pass blocking grades over 70 in each of his last two seasons. My question to you, with the moves that Ryan Poles has made on this offensive line, with Karan Amageji coming in, is this a make or break season for Braxton Jones, or is Braxton Jones safe? Is he one of the top tackles in the NFL?
Yeah, like, and I was just looking this up because, like, and I said, yeah, just kind of in general. I understand why it is maybe a little jarring when you see, you know, an offensive line that had struggled the last couple of years with two tackles at 31 and 32. You're right. It is incredibly difficult to find, like, cause it's not just a list of like the top 32 tackles in like left tackles in order, right? Tackles. Right. These are all tackles. I'm not surprised to see Darnell Wright on that list. I was a little surprised to see Braxton Jones on that list. And yes, some of the numbers are a little head scratching. Like, I was just trying to find pass rush win rate for, you know, that's an ESPN stat that does tend to get a lot of criticism for, you know, like, what does it mean? Because in terms of offensive tackles, pass block win rate, not pass rush. Pass rush is for defense. Pass block win rate, he's fifth. So the ones who were before him, Trent Williams from San Francisco, Rasheed Walker from Green Bay, Brian O'Neill, who's a right tackle from Minnesota, and then Deion Dawkins. Then it's Braxton Jones. And it just doesn't pass the eye test. You know what I mean? Like, yes, he only gave up, he only was credited for giving up two sacks last year. You know, he's played the majority of the season. He played like every single snap as a rookie. Like, all of those things matter. But then you see, like, in one metric, he's ranked as high as he is when it just doesn't feel like the pass protection on that side of the line for a lot of different reasons. You know, look who was coming in and out at left guard all year. Like, that's a big problem. But for Braxton Jones to be, you know, thrown into that list when some of the numbers just don't seem to like support it one way or the other, it just doesn't, like, I could understand if people are a little confounded by that because it just feels like it might not completely meet what you saw the production being. As it pertains to your question of, is this a make or break year? Absolutely. Like, we knew this going into the season when Ryan Poles told us in January at the season-ending press conference, when he was asked about Braxton Jones, he said that he definitely thinks he can be a starting, he is a starting left tackle in the NFL, but the Bears would not shy away from adding competition to make the offensive line better. It's the right answer, and it also leads you to know how they feel that, like, Braxton Jones has been serviceable. He's been a bright spot for them in a couple years where the offensive line was all over the place and he was their best option to be at left tackle. Like, he beat out Riley Reiff right away. Like, I still go back to, like, that training camp in 2022 when, as a rookie, after he's drafted, we all thought they brought in Riley Reiff in the 11th hour of training camp to, like, be starting for them at left tackle and then, you know, claiming Alex Leatherwood and thinking, okay, this guy was a first-round pick, played 1,000 snaps for the Raiders a year before. He never had a job on the offensive line. So clearly Braxton Jones did something right in the process to still have his job. But that doesn't mean that he's the long-term answer there. Like, he's going into year three, as you mentioned, with, like, the bull rush and some of the things that he has been very vocal and open about, some of the things he has still struggled with. This is the year where those same sort of excuses aren't going to get him a pass. Like, if there is somebody better that person could potentially, and I don't know if it's going to be Karan Amageji. I don't know if he's going to be ready to do that. And Ryan Poles said as much, but that doesn't mean that Braxton Jones is safe for the future. Like, if they have a way to upgrade that spot, it's a premium position in the NFL. It's a premium position for this front office. And they've said that they will look to do that. But, you know, for both of these two to be on the list, I guess Bears fans should be feeling pretty good about that. And that might also point to, you know, based on PFF's metrics and how they see it, like, what was chicken and egg argument here? What was the issue last year? Was it the quarterback or was it the offensive line? Offensive line caught a lot of heat for Justin Fields. Might not have been all on them based on, like, at least this is one source telling you it might not have been all on, you know, the pass protection. And yes, we do know the interior pass protection was not as good as, like, you know, two bookends that they have. But that also points to, like, how they envision this offense, because he's our predictive list, like how they envision it changing with a different quarterback behind this offensive line.
Yeah, I think what's interesting, I tell people to do this, right? Like, the averages always can look great, especially, right, when we talk basketball and people sit there and talk about, oh, this guy's this for the season. He's a 25-point-per-game scorer. I take the Chris Middleton effect. I say, go look at his game by games. Tell me why he's a 25-point-per-game scorer. Well, he scored 50 in two games, and then he got a lot of 15s. There's some sixes on there. There's a 20-point game, and then all of a sudden you average it out, and you're like, oh, he's a pretty good player, and he averages. It's like, yeah, but he wasn't a good player when I needed him to. Yeah. Do that same thing with this. Don't go somewhere else. Go to PFF and look at how they grade him out as far as a pass block and run block guy. Yeah. It is very up and down. There are some high highs. There are some really high highs where you're like, this guy dominated this day. But the lows are very low, down to like 29.2 as far as pass block grades, right? So, like, I tell people, you know, that you have to look through everything throughout the season, not just the averages overall. And when you start to look at the game by games, it does leave me to question Braxton on this list at 31. But I think that also speaks to, like I said, when we were at the draft, it's freaking hard to find tackles. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the most difficult position in football to consistently be able to hit at. And I think that, I guess outside of quarterback, with dealing with what the Bears have dealt with. But I think that when you look at kind of how Braxton has played throughout his time here, nobody's saying he's been bad 17 games.
Correct.
He has not. But have those downs been down? Has he had those struggle moments? Has he had those, you know, where you're just sitting there going, he's getting killed on the left side and he needs to figure something out? I think that happens a lot throughout the season, and the highs are high and the lows are very low.
And that's why the Bears have to be smart about this in the way that they are planning for that position, not just this year, but going forward. I think the way that they look at this, knowing how the offseason played out for them from free agency, they didn't go get another left tackle, like, then they didn't draft one. That's... You know, I mean, they drafted one, but not one to start this year, is right, what I'm trying to say.
He's like, supposed to be
eventually. Yeah. But like, they are already planning for a succession plan at that position. And that's OK. Now, if Braxton Jones shows you this year, like, a miraculous, like, jump, it's not like I don't think he, like, had any sort of dip from his rookie season. I mean, yeah, the injuries were a thing that didn't happen his rookie season that kept him out, you know, that hindered him a little bit last year. But it's, you know, I don't feel like you can ever feel completely stagnant at that position. You're always trying to bring in depth on the offensive line. And if you find somebody in the third round who eventually, after some time in the NFL, can be ready to take on that position, then you do that. Like, it's never a bad thing to be thinking about the future there while saying that he's good enough to be our left tackle this year based on what they expect Caleb Williams to do and be able to compensate for behind an offensive line.
Taking a look at the right tackle on that list, which, listen, I was surprised. I'm not as surprised to see Darnell on there, but maybe I did scroll through the list going,
like, how many other right tackles were there too? Like, that yeah, was my first thought.
Like, I did go through the list and go, I would be fine expecting him not to be on this list and still know he's a pretty good player that the Bears have built up here. But their thoughts on Darnell Wright, the only second year player who was on the list. Wright had a 66 run blocking grade, ranked first among all rookies in his class. In addition, he was also promising in pass protection toward the second half of the season after going through some growing pains in his first month. After giving up one sack in each of his first five games in the NFL, the former Tennessee Volunteer allowed just three sacks in the final 12 games. What kind of step are you looking to get from Darnell Wright in season two? But I thought he had a really good rookie season. Like they said, went through the growing pains. Yep. But year two, what do you need to see from Darnell?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the offense kind of, like, you think about, like, when those sacks came, one in the first five, that was when the Bears offense was all over the damn place. And they were trying to figure out, like, what they were doing, you know, with the quarterback, and, like, are they trying to be pass first? They trying to force a square peg into a round hole? Like, I'm not surprised that was reflected in the fact that he gave up a sack each game when they were losing a lot. But, you know, for Darnell Wright, like, to be drafted top 10, like to live up to your draft status, like you take another jump from there. And I thought that at the end of the season, and again, like Braxton Jones, you got to give him a lot of credit for how much he played. He had the highest snap count of any Bear period, offense or defense, last year. They put a lot on him, and I think he responded to that. And anytime you hear Chris Morgan, the Bears offensive line coach, talk about Darnell Wright, he talks about, like, you know, the amount of work that this player put in from the time that they had that on-field workout with him at Tennessee to see, okay, can you handle the load that we're going to throw at you? Like, I think he lived up to that. And the takeaway I had from him in his rookie season was that, does he still have a long way to go? Sure. But this was a rookie season where they gave him a lot on his plate and he didn't crumble under pressure in that. Like, a couple moments, I mean, you can point to, like the Aiden Hutchinson, when he blows by him in Detroit. Is that on him? No. Look at where they were backed up to at that point in the part of the field. I think that there's some moments for Darnell Wright that, of course, he's going to look at and say, like, I want back on that. But, like, as a run blocker, first and foremost, he was really good. He was a road grader. And so anybody can improve in pass protection from year one to year two. I mean, there's when we hear from him at training camp at some point, or if it's OTAs, like I imagine he'll talk about those things and wanting to get better in those specific areas. But I think that it was a net positive by and large for him to be as productive as he was as a rookie and like come in immediately. There was never any question of like, is he going to start? Is he not going to start? Like from day one, that was his job. And there was never any question about that being his job. With Braxton Jones, even his rookie season, like I said, like I thought Riley Reiff was going to be their left tackle. I thought we all did. And, you know, clearly Braxton Jones did a great job proving his worth and what his ceiling could, you know, what his ceiling is and what his, you know, what his ability to get there can be. But there's still, I think, you know, just in terms of where you're drafted, that certainly plays into like, all right, do we need to start thinking about, like, they're not thinking about replacing their right tackle right now. They could even be thinking, and I'm saying could, this is just this, I'm not reporting this, but maybe one day they're thinking they'd move Darnell Wright to left tackle. I don't know that to be the case. Right. The left tackle spot, and I saw this in Minnesota. When I covered Minnesota, I was like glad for the sake of the offensive line and just for the player himself that they didn't move Brian O'Neill, who was a dominant right tackle for them. Right. They didn't move him to the left side because they're like, okay, well, this is the most important position on the offensive line. We got to make sure that's you know what it is. Darnell Wright played the majority of his career, even though he does have experience at left tackle at Tennessee, like at right tackle. And if you're a right tackle, you're a right tackle in the NFL. And I just feel like that's something that the Bears, you know, need to make sure that they stick by that instead of moving guys around because they feel they need to fill a hole on the other side. That's why they went out and got Karan Amagaji in the draft, because he's a left tackle. Can he play other positions? Yes. But like, if you think that there is a place that you can upgrade, not necessarily that you need to fill, but you can upgrade eventually, you go out and get that player whenever, whether it's draft or free agency, and go about it from that.
I think the context you have to add to Darnell as well on the second half of that season is, remember, he was dealing with that shoulder injury all through that second half of the season, just playing through it. And that's where you saw him kind of get better, you know, and I think that to me, now listen, the defenses he were going up against, right, as you start to go through them, maybe you go, well, you know, it's a little bit less, but it's still NFL level defenses. He's still a rookie. Yeah. That's still, you know, him figuring his game out. I thought that he did a really good job in the second half of the season, of course, cutting down on the sacks, but just, you know, finding a way to continually make an impact, especially in my favorite version of this Bears offensive line is when Tevin Jenkins was on that right tackle spot and you just had those two monsters on the right side. And it was just like, I don't care who we got at running back at this point. Give the ball, run it to the right. They're going to lay everybody out in front of them. That you really saw, to me, the Bears offensive line take a step in the right direction during that period. I'd love to see them get back to that. But they like Tevin at the left guard position. You paid Nate Davis $10 million. He's going to be there. But I just think that seeing the improvement of him through the injuries, fighting through the injuries, playing through the injuries, even seeing Braxton at points last season kind of with the same thing, right? He missed the time, came back, and kind of got himself back into form through the injuries. I'm excited to say that there is a belief that the Bears have two bookend, even if they are at the end of this, tackles right now, because it means that you're at a certain level on your offensive line and you can improve on that. And you're doing that with a third year player and a first year player who are now a second year player.
That's something they can hang their hat on for sure. Like knowing where the offensive line was 2 years ago when they had to overhaul most of that unit. And to have two players on this list, I mean, it's a subjective list, but you know, it's a hard position to find. Like, you know, having tackles who can hold up against the best of the best, you know, pass rushers in the NFL. Like, you know, I think they both deserve, you know, credit for the way that they've shown they can do that, you know, and trying to do that on a more consistent basis is what's going to be the goal for this entire offensive line. But we know that like the issues here were on the interior, which is why the majority of the resources that they spent on the offensive line came as, you know, the Ryan Bates trade and then getting some depth at guard, getting some depth at center, and then also getting some depth at guard.
Let's hope it keeps up. I need a good offensive line heading into this season. Before we get out of here, Courtney, we got an interesting retiring here. This is a different sport. This is Angel Hernandez retiring from being an umpire in MLB baseball. And normally with these retirements, you get like a cheer for like, hey, the guy had a great career. He's been a solid guy. Everybody loves him. But I remember Angel Hernandez as the only guy I've ever seen throw Mark Burley out of a game. I remember Angel Hernandez as being the guy who seemed to have a personal vendetta with anything Chicago White Sox. So I can't stand Angel Hernandez. So when I saw that, I took a shot. I'm not going to lie. It was a fun weekend. I took a shot. I was glad to see that he was done destroying the game of baseball. I hope you have a great life and everything works out for you in future endeavors.
I like my first thought was the interaction. Remember when Steve McMichael sang the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley? And like he started like a chorus of boos. He's like, I'm gonna have a conversation with the home plate umpire after the game. And then they like flash down to Angel Hernandez, like staring up at him in the broadcaster's booth with Harry Carey. Like it was just the guy took himself so seriously. And the reason that there's so many people kind of dunking on him today is because he made so much of this about himself. Yeah. And I, you know, umpires have a very difficult job. I think that it's one of the, I mean, all officials do. It's a thankless job. You're never going to be recognized for anything, like, unless you're, like, doing your job, like, to, you know, and then it's kind of quiet. Like, nobody's like, man, the refs had a great day today. It's always, man, the refs cost this team a game. For Angel Hernandez to have inserted himself into the story more times than not, I mean, it's beyond the insane, wide, uneven, inconsistent strike zone. Like if you go, like the best thing about Twitter is that like people have access to like putting these clips together, like watching just like how much it varies. But like it beyond that, like I remember when he sued Major League Baseball for racial discrimination because he was not getting playoff games. And I don't think he had worked a World Series since 2005. It might have correct me if I'm wrong, might have been the last time the White Sox were in the World Series. Might have been 05 that he was last time in a World Series game. But, you know, the whole thing that like Major League Baseball, when they were like, you know, shooting him down, he like lost the lawsuit, tried to appeal it, he lost the appeal. Like the court filing that baseball had, it all, like a lot of it stemmed from in 2013, there was a ninth inning home run from Adam Rosales when he was with Oakland. And it was a call that very clearly was the wrong call. Like the ball went over the fence and they didn't rule it as such. And that was something that like he was so dug in on. Like he never had a bad call in his mind. And baseball kept deferring to that. Like his inability to move past that incident prevented him from getting World Series assignments. And I think about some of the umpires right now who make it all about them. Hunter Wendelstedt, the guy who threw, do you remember a month ago when Aaron Boone got thrown out in the first inning because some clown behind first base, behind home plate, which is his prerogative as a fan, yelled something and Hunter Wendelstedt thought it came from Aaron Boone because he had just given him a warning. And then he's like, you're out of here. Like, and he wouldn't admit he was wrong in that. Like, that's why so many people hate officials, because they get so dug in and they make themselves the story. Like, you should be anonymous as an official. People should know your names, obviously, if that's like what you're doing. If you're doing this for a job, like, you know the officials that are at every game, you know what the crews are, you know what the crew's tendencies are. But you should never have the spotlight on you the way that Angel Hernandez did for all of the wrong reasons, the way that Joe West did for all of the wrong reasons, the way that Ted Valentine in college basketball, and of course, we've seen this, you know,
Scott Foster,
my God, like, the guy has, like, there's stats like on games that, like, Chris Paul has played in that Scott Foster has officiated that show there is a discrepancy when he and his crew call various games. And I mean, the NFL, I think Brad Allen last year is a prime example of that. I mean, think about the pass interference call that didn't happen in the Chiefs Green Bay game and how much of an outcry there was from that. And then I believe his crew was in another game at the week later, like some of these these phantom pass interference calls. And of course, roughing the passer being like one that has been so poorly called the last couple of years. Like, those are things that I don't know. We keep trying to figure out, like, does having New York more involved with it, like, for, you know, all sports? I believe that's where everybody's kind of like manship is. Same thing with baseball. But, like, I don't wish anybody to lose their job, but you just want to see things like taken out of the hands that are like from people who just have made it about themselves and have been dug in when they are blatantly wrong.
And here's my thing, and you brought up a great list of people there, but this almost changes the question for me. I was gonna go with, like, you know, who's the person, if they retire from football, you'd be happy, but I think that this changes kind of the talking point because you brought up something good there. You've got that list of names. You guys are the reason. Scott Foster's, the Angel Hernandez, the Jim, you go on and on, right? The guys who make the game about them. You're the reason that people want robot umpires, robot referees, want New York involved. I think that's the thing to me, right? Like, find a way to where if you're screwing up at a certain level or you can clearly see that you're making it about you, you don't get games. That's how you go away from all of the robot umpire. Nobody's
Look at called, Brad Allen's crew in the postseason. Nowhere to be found because of what happened with, you know, several games this year. And I mean, like, it's just, it's remarkable too on judgment calls. Like, think
that's too late to me though. You know what I'm saying? Like Brad Allen's crew was such a great example. Cause I remember it was like, no, you're costing people like playoff opportunities because of how bad you're calling it to the season. It shouldn't be, well, you don't get to ref playoffs. You're just giving them a vacation. Yeah, he's not getting as much money, but he's doing this on the side anyway.
I mean, the thing with me in baseball, because it's different in the NFL, like, you know, because there's not, you know, a stagnant, you know, the action's moving up and down the field. Like, a robo-ump, the ABS system, like, I believe it was called, like, all balls and strikes. Like, it's the one that's being used at the AAA level that they even last year were talking about. Well, maybe 2024, we'll see it implemented in baseball. Obviously, it's not here yet, but I think for something like a strike zone, having that be uniform, it's 2024. We don't need to have like discretionary, like left up to an umpire on that. However, like, I think about that White Sox game against Baltimore last week. Like, that's a freaking judgment call to have the game end on an infield fly where there was interference. Like, come on. Like, you could tell that the base runner was not interfering with the infielder to know that you shouldn't end a game that way. But like, that's not something that a robot can make. There are certain elements of sports that should not be left up to the human, like, you know, like anyone's, like, you know, like I call it this way. If you want something that is objective and not subjective, there are ways to make that happen. But, you know, I think the thing that we learn here with Angel Hernandez and just kind of seeing like what the outpouring has been in like the wrong way, like, baseball let that go on way too long. And I know he had not umpired a crew. He and his crew had not umpired, or he hadn't been the crew chief for weeks and weeks and weeks. I think it was like May 9th might have been his last game. This feels, as much as I read the statement his lawyer gave to The Athletic, as much as them saying that this was not like a forced retirement, kind of feels like if they were looking for some sort of settlement here, that it was time ultimately, and that baseball didn't want to put up with this anymore.
But it's the best of the best. This is what you should be doing. This is how you should be handling. You should not be sitting here, and baseball is struggling with this. you should not be sitting here 30, 40 years sitting here looking at this guy going, he's not very good at his job, but like, you know, we need guys. Like, no, like this shit, like, we've got the best of the best in every other spot in every other sport, except at the officiating crew. There does need to be repercussions. I understand there's unions and stuff that you got to deal with, but guess what? I've worked for a union. I'm in a union right now. If I suck at my job, you get fired, and maybe there's another job in the union that you can get. But you suck at your job. That's kind of how
it just,
you end up getting moved on from. I just think that sports kind of has this, I don't know if it's like they don't want to pick a fight with them because maybe if you mess with one, you lose all of them. But there does need to be some kind of
hard job. We're not saying it's not a hard job, and it's not just a matter of, oh, we'll just get another crew to replace these guys. Like, there is a shortage of, like, you know, there's obviously academies that, you know, umpires, for example, it's different than in the NFL, but there's like academies that they go to. I believe there's one out in Arizona that's like kind of like the school if you want to be a Major League Baseball umpire that you go to. But like, there's a shortage of refs. Like, wait, shit, dating all the way going down to like the youth league, like this, you know, youth leagues. This is not an easy job. And I don't think that they have like the ability to like just recruit a bunch of people in and then having these like massive pools of officials. But like, you would like to think that if you are at the major league level, that they would have enough resources put into this to make sure that you don't have people like an Angel Hernandez, you know, blatantly getting things wrong and continuing, like having a long enough leash where they continue to do that. I mean, that's the whole argument in with officiating in the NFL is, should there be full-time officials? And they're like, if the owners wanted it, there would be, but they don't even see it that way. I remember having, you know, conversations with this or at league meetings. This is not something that they feel like would be solved. These judgment calls solved by having full-time, like, you know, usually these are same crews every single week. Like, you work with your crew, you get assigned to different games, you know the tendencies, but they don't want to pay officials full time. I don't know if that would solve it either, but I just know that that's kind of like where the buck stops on a lot of it, because they don't want to put those people in position that this is your only job.
Let's make a reality TV show out of that. I'd watch that. Like you get 72 guys and they're like coming together to be referees, and you're trying to, like, if you get down to like the final two guys, you get a contract. I'd watch that. I'm not going to lie. That's
not a bad idea.
I'd be in for that. Let's make that a thing. Let's make refereeing cool around America. My one person, by the way, just before we get up out of here, is Gronk. One person, if they retired from football, you'd be happy. Yeah, I don't need to see Gronk on TV
anymore. I think a lot of Bears fans, even though he's no longer in the division, would just love to see Aaron Rodgers retire.
Yeah, but he's a good football player. I can deal with Aaron Rodgers. I'd be glad to like finally see him out of the league.
Sure.
But he's a good football player. I can deal with that. Gronk was a good football player. Let's stop it there. Let's stop it there. Appreciate you guys tuning in and showing love. Let us know in the comments below, who's your one person that if they retired from football right now, you would be a little bit excited. I'm not going to lie. I was a little giddy to hear Aaron Hernandez was gone. Andrew Hernandez, I should say, was gone. Aaron Hernandez, that's a wild, wild. A
wild Freudian slip, man.
Well, if I'm here tomorrow, we'll have an episode tomorrow with Jason McKee. Appreciate y'all tuning in and showing love. Hit that like. I think after the Tom Brady roast, everything's on the table, yes. Right? Anyway, y'all stay safe out there. For Courtney Cronin, it's your boy Pat the Designer. Back at it again. Peace. Bear done.